In March 2017, Ben Rhodes witnessed something disturbing in Myanmar. Aung San Suu Kyi, once a global icon of democratic resistance, had transformed into a silent accomplice to ethnic cleansing. Later that year, Rhodes discovered he'd been spied on by former Mossad operatives hired by Trump associates. These weren't isolated incidents, but symptoms of a worldwide democratic recession. The hopeful era that followed the Cold War's end had given way to something darker, an authoritarian resurgence using remarkably similar tactics across different countries and contexts. What makes this global shift so alarming isn't just its scope, but its methodology. From Budapest to Moscow, Beijing to Washington, a playbook has emerged. Exploit unresolved questions of national identity, weaponize technology for surveillance and propaganda, and wrap authoritarianism in the language of nationalism. Most troubling of all, America's role in enabling this democratic decline through our foreign policy choices, economic priorities, and domestic vulnerabilities. When the Berlin Wall fell, 6-year-old Sándor Lederer watched Hungary transform from Soviet control to democratic promise. That same year, a young Viktor Orbán, then a liberal politician, boldly denounced Russian imperialism before 100,000 cheering Hungarians. Freedom seemed ascendant worldwide as communist regimes collapsed, apartheid ended, and dictatorships fell. Yet Hungary never reconciled its painful past. Teachers avoided discussing Nazi collaboration and communist rule, topics that touched every family. Instead of forging a renewed national identity, Hungary embraced American-led globalization as its substitute. This identity vacuum created perfect conditions for nationalist resurgence. By 2014, Orbán declared liberal democracy dead and championed nationalist illiberalism instead, tapping historical grievances and identifying the 2008 financial crisis as the catalyst for his nationalist project. Boris Nemtsov's journey from promising reformer to assassinated opposition figure mirrors Russia's post-Soviet trajectory. After supporting Yeltsin during the 1991 coup, he rose to deputy prime minister and potential successor. His downfall came when he demanded transparency from oligarchs during privatization. They retaliated with character assassination campaigns on their television channels, tactics remarkably similar to how Fox News would later target Obama and Clinton. The 2004 Beslan school hostage crisis became Putin's pivotal moment. After Chechen militants took hostages, resulting in nearly 200 children's deaths, Putin framed the tragedy within Russia's vulnerability narrative. "We demonstrated weakness, and the weak are beaten." He used this security threat to justify dismantling democratic institutions, eliminating gubernatorial elections, changing parliamentary rules to favor his party, and restricting foreign NGOs. China never embraced liberal democracy after the Cold War. With its size, wealth, and confidence, it threatens to eclipse democracy globally. After the 1989 Tiananmen Square protests, China's Communist Party strengthened its control, adopting capitalism as a practical choice to accumulate power while cultivating nationalism against the West and Japan. China never embraced liberal democracy after the Cold War. With its size, wealth, and confidence, it threatens to eclipse democracy globally. After the 1989 Tiananmen Square protests, China's Communist Party strengthened its control, adopting capitalism as a practical choice to accumulate power while cultivating nationalism against the West and Japan. Xi Jinping's governance model centers on technology repurposed for control. China's police cloud system integrates vast personal data, while a social credit system scores citizens on reliability. In Hong Kong, Beijing's control intensified gradually, imperceptible day-to-day, but transformative over time. Mainland tycoons bought media outlets, businesses pressured employees against political expression, and certain speech disappeared without explicit bans. Most disturbing was the lack of widespread resistance. The most shocking thing is that it was not shocking. The Forever War provided a template for authoritarians worldwide. Chinese journalist Ching Chong identified America's Patriot Act as the moment America chose nationalism over universal values, violating the spirit of your founding fathers. America's post-9/11 security measures, surveillance powers, detention without trial, torture, created a model that authoritarian leaders eagerly adopted. Putin transformed Russia while hiding behind America's war on terror. Xi Jinping cited America's approach when launching China's People's War on Terror against Uyghurs, imprisoning a million in concentration camps. After Tiananmen, American presidents quickly reconciled with China. Bush normalized relations, and Clinton welcomed China into the World Trade Organization despite rule violations, creating an economic relationship where American manufacturing jobs disappeared while cheaper goods flowed to consumers. Obama compared the U.S. government to an ocean liner, massive and difficult to redirect. In 2008, he faced a choice: let the economy collapse to rebuild differently, or rescue its unequal structure. Choosing the latter averted deeper crisis but preserved inequality. With only 2 years of Democratic congressional control, Obama implemented Obamacare, rescued the auto industry, and regulated Wall Street, but couldn't transform the economic system's fundamental nature. The COVID pandemic revealed America's profound failings, a superpower's collapse connected directly to our identity. It was terrifying that nearly half the country embraced 4 more years of American carnage, yet it made sad sense. Once you believe 2 plus 2 equals 5, looking at a deer and calling it a horse, there's no easy return. The alternative reality offers belonging that transcends truth itself. America is for you, not the others. Despite the grim picture, resistance movements offer hope. In Hong Kong, Rhodes observes orderly polling stations during what might be both the first and last free election for many young workers distributing flyers. David, a frontline protester, speaks about being tear-gassed and joining human chains against police. Though expecting failure, he values participation itself. Following Bruce Lee's Be Water philosophy, protesters maintain flexibility and anonymity, gaining advantages against formal police tactics. Many Hong Kong businesses quietly support demonstrators by providing shelter. David emphasizes Hong Kong identity has been created during this movement. Despite impossible odds against China, protesters remain committed, having discovered themselves through resistance, something that cannot be taken away. Alexei Navalny challenges Putin not by parroting Western positions, but by criticizing him for using anti-Western propaganda to justify imperial ambitions that impoverish ordinary Russians. His argument: Putin exploits patriotism for personal profit, while Russia could become one of the best countries in the world without that stuff. America is no longer a hegemon, and there's opportunity in that, to recover ourselves as a nation of outsiders comprising every strand of humanity. We can learn from young Hungarians building inclusive politics, Russians exposing corruption, and Hong Kongers defending individual agency. America isn't exceptional, but can offer solidarity as people who came from everywhere. Moving forward requires drawing on our better history as a nation distrustful of power, united by principles that allow individual freedom regardless of tribe. Rhodes connects his personal American awakening with global political awakenings. His consciousness began watching Brooklyn Bridge Centennial fireworks. We do big things. His family background blended opposites: a Jewish mother from New York and Christian father from Texas. Different politically, but both patriotic in believing America could offer outsiders belonging. Obama and Trump represent two separate Americas, two different stories rooted in our founding contradictions. The Cold War's end removed the external threat providing national unity without establishing a new purpose. The real Cold War now is at home, between people living in reality and those choosing a false reality of white supremacist grievances. The battle for American identity may be the most consequential of our time. By embracing our role as one nation among many, drawing strength from our diversity rather than exceptionalism, we might find a more authentic path forward for ourselves and democracies worldwide struggling against authoritarianism.